We're glad that you're here. We're starting a new series. This is going to be, we're interrupting our series on the Gospel of Mark. And I told you the last couple of weeks we're going to be kind of inserting some short four-week series throughout this year to focus on some of the spiritual practices. For those of you who have been a part of one of our Practicing the Way groups, this is starting to work towards the rule of life that we talked about in those groups. If you have not been able to be a part of one of the Practicing the Way groups, which is somewhat of an intro into the idea of discipleship here at Journey, but it's the idea of apprenticeship of Jesus, not just learning, but learning to be with Jesus, become like Jesus, and do what Jesus did. Yes, we're probably going to be looking to start an additional Practicing the Way group, which is an eight-week group this summer. And so we'll tell you more about that as we come into that. And so if you're new to Journey, or if you didn't have a chance to do that this past fall, we would love for you to take part in that coming up. My goal is that every person will have kind of an introduction to the idea of discipleship through Practicing the Way. It's going to take us quite a while to go through the nine different spiritual practices that make up the rule of life. But we'll just do that slowly and take our time because we're on a journey. We are not in a sprint. We are running a marathon. And so we're going to take our time doing that. But as Ken said, and I appreciate that intro to Sabbath, we are beginning with the spiritual practice of Sabbath because it is one of the most transformative practices that you can do. There are nine practices overall that we are going to go through over the course of the next couple of years. And those nine practices are going to make up what you may have been heard called a rule of life. And a rule of life is basically this. It's a way to structure your life, to grow, to enjoy life, and to be able to be an apprentice of Jesus. There are nine things that Jesus himself practiced that he did not originate those nine practices. There are things that he entered into and continued the practice and demonstrated for us that we would practice those as well. So Sabbath, you know, if you've been with us through the Gospel of Mark, Sabbath has come up several times already. And Jesus is somewhat reshaping our understanding of Sabbath. So I want to talk a little bit with you over the next few weeks, the next 4 weeks. I'm going to be sharing this week and next week. And then Ken's going to be sharing the third week of this series. And then Paul Schreiner is going to be sharing the fourth week of this series. We're going to be going through four main ideas. The first one that we're going to talk about today is just the concept of stopping. And many of us struggle to stop. I don't know what your downtime is like, but if you get a day off and you sit for about 5 minutes and that's about all you can muster, and then you've got to get busy and go do something, today's going to be a struggle for you. There are others that you're going to love this. Like, stopping is your middle name. Like, do I have to start going? Because if I can just stop, that's good. And so you kind of get to check out today because you've got stopping down. Now, when we get to getting going, that may be a harder week. But today we want to talk about just the power of stopping. If we talk to doctors, we read studies, sociologists, psychologists, one of the things we know that in this technologically evolving world is that we have the opportunity to be busier now than ever before. It's incredible the number of images that we are bombarded with that make us long for a life different from the one that we actually live. Usually those are vacation ads in which you want to be sitting on a beach and you want to have your favorite drink and the sun is out and the waves are lapping. Or maybe it's a hike through the mountains. I don't know what your place or desired place of rest is, but a good amount of our marketing images really glorify the idea of rest. And they're so successful because so few of us actually have a rhythm of rest within our lives. Physicians and researchers will tell us, and you probably already know this, that your body needs downtime. You were created with a need to stop. All kinds of things happen when we stop and we allow our bodies to regenerate. There's a tremendous amount of research into how much sleep you need and what happens to the body when you sleep, not just rest, but when you get a good night's sleep, that include things like regulating just your hormones and your moods, regulating your appetite. Your body regenerates, your muscles regenerate, tissues regenerate during rest, and they have a tendency to be depleted, worn out, torn, used up in times of work. Just cognitively, when I'm super busy and I don't rest, I forget stuff. I don't know about you, but when I am super, super busy, my brain doesn't function the right way. But then if I get a good night's rest, or I take a period of time in which I just am resting and enjoying life and enjoying God and seeing that life is good, after a period of rest like that, all of a sudden I'll remember all these things that I had forgotten about. Sometimes I'll forget names, I'll never forget a face, but my brain just doesn't work right if I don't have enough rest. For a lot of you, you know that the last few months, and actually the last couple of years for us, has been incredibly busy caring for Mom and running back and forth to Knoxville, and I'm bivocational, so that means I've got two full-time jobs. We also have our own family of things that we need to do, and it's been interesting over the last 6 weeks since Mom passed away that she hasn't needed anything from me. I haven't needed to go anywhere. I haven't needed to drive to Knoxville or care for her in our home or meet with any doctors or make sure every few hours she's got the medication she needs. And after 2.5 years of caring for Mom in different capacities, even in the last few weeks, I can feel just a lightness to life. Not that Mom is a burden, but just a lightness in not having to be busy every single minute. We had the opportunity to go down Thursday and have lunch and just be with Emma's professors, and they were just talking about their students and their just their semester and their 4 years that they spent at Samford. But on the way down, Deidre and I were driving out of our neighborhood, and I said, you know what, I am so stressed out right now. If you ever deal with this kind of stress or anxiety where it's like your blood pressure is going up and your heart rate increases, feels like adrenaline is just kind of coursing. And I said, I don't know why. I don't know what I'm stressed about. Like, there's not a thing that I need to worry about right now in this moment. I've worked hard all week. No one's expecting anything from me. I'm good to go. This is an exciting weekend. But right now in this moment, my heart's about to jump out of my chest. And what I have discovered is just in taking time to stop and slow down, when you haven't given yourself those opportunities, your body takes over your messaging. And there are times that you're going to feel anxiety and stress because you haven't had the time to recover and expel that. And so it can just reappear. I was talking to Emma just yesterday about how are you feeling? You're out of school. You don't have classes. You know, finishing up your senior year, you have a ton of stuff you have to do. She's like, I'm just kind of stressed, and I don't know why. I don't have to do anything, but I'm kind of stressed out. It's like, me too. I know exactly how that feels, because that's the exact conversation I had with your mom on our way down to Samford. The idea of Sabbath is not a practice that we do to prove that we love Jesus. It's not something that we do because this is what makes a good Christian. The practice of Sabbath is something we do because this is how we were created. We need a moment to stop and to recognize, I am not just about what I can do. It's not about what I can produce. The word Shabbat is the Hebrew word that we translate Sabbath from, and it literally means to stop, to cease, or to be done. And it is an incredible practice that allows us to not just reset, but to experience a goodness of life that we will miss if we never stop to think how good life is. If you work a lot, like I work a lot, and Deidre and I, we've spent a lot of time on this concept of Sabbath, especially our friends who are here from Bema this morning, that, you know, we talk a lot about Sabbath in season one of Bema and really throughout the podcast, because it is such a crucial idea of what it looks like for us to truly be one with God, one with each other, be a community, and also just experience that life is good and God is good and we are good. Just turn to your neighbor and say, you are good. We haven't done this in a while. You are good. Everybody's smiling and laughing. It's kind of awkward and like, I don't know if they're good or not, but I'm going to say it because he told me to. It just feels good to hear and to say that we are good. And turn to your neighbor and say, we are good. And now turn to another neighbor and say, God is good. What would it look like to live life perpetually in the moment of believing that we are good, life is good, and God is good? Because what we tend to focus on are all the bad things, the things that are going wrong. For those of us who spend a little too much time on social media, we are bombarded with negative images and negative ideas and negative headlines because that anxiety, as it grows within us, causes us to scroll twice as long as we would if the messages were positive. But every now and then you come across a positive message and you're like, I just got to stop. This feels out of place. This feel-good, positive message coming through social media, I need to stop and enjoy this because we recognize this is just not the way life often works. Well, what I want to do this morning with the rest of our time, then we're going to take communion together, is I want to give you kind of a biblical foundation for this practice. We're going to be talking about this for 4 weeks. I want to talk about just kind of what it looks like historically. How was Sabbath practiced? And I want to give you some tips about how you can start practicing. And I also want to spend just a moment talking about how Jesus framed Sabbath, because I want us to enter into this conversation in the way that Jesus would enter into the conversation and not by adding another stack of rules to your life that if you're going to follow Jesus, you got to follow these rules too. Because once we do that, it's no longer Sabbath. All right, so hopefully by the end of these 4 weeks, if you trust me, and if you buy into this, and if you aren't already practicing it, if you begin just to start to practice some of these things, I would be surprised if you don't walk away feeling like something significant is happening in your life. It is going to require some reorganization of how you spend your time, a reorganization perhaps of some priorities, but if you will try it, I'm telling you, it will make a difference within your life. You were not made to work nonstop. So let's get into just the biblical foundation for this. We're going to start in Genesis chapter 2, verse 1. At the story of creation, we have this demonstration, a call, and if we're going to apprentice with how God works, a call to stop after a time of work. Genesis chapter 2, verse 1 says, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all this work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation." After all of this work, which was not complete, by the way, we sometimes think, well, God always completes everything perfectly the way it's supposed to be forever. And that's sometimes how we get stuck in traditions and old ways of thinking, old ways of doing things. But in this moment, God is, we know he's not finished, because we know he's finished to one degree. We know that the work is not done, because the whole point that Adam and Eve were pointing in the garden, not their whole point, perhaps, I'm getting a little overzealous. But the plan for them was that they, hand in hand with God, would continue to manage and to work the creation, and perhaps not create in the same way that God did, but they were placed there to work and manage the creation, to continue something ongoing. But the creative work of God in the heavens and the earth and all of the things that would fill them, for 6 days he labored, and on the seventh he stopped and he rested. And he said that it was what? Not very good. That's not what he said. He said it was what? It was very good. These two ideas are so importantly intertwined with one another, the idea of stopping and resting and the idea of something being very good. If you stop and rest and you're running from a tornado and you say, it's time for my Sabbath, that's not very good. Keep running. You know what I'm saying? You want a sense of goodness, of pause. So as we go through these, I want you just to put yourself in this perspective, and I want to ask you, where are you on the timeline of Sabbath within your lives? And I don't mean 3 years ago I had a really great day off. I mean weekly, what does the rhythm of your life look like? You're going to hear me intertwine these words, rhythm and spiritual practice. A few years ago we did a series similar to this on rhythms. The idea is that we're creating a rhythm that is restorative, a rhythm that is good, a rhythm that brings growth. And it doesn't mean that some weeks it doesn't happen, but that becomes a rare occasion rather than the Sabbath being the rare occasion. In Exodus, this idea of Sabbath comes back again, in which the law is put out. This is how I want you to live your lives. This is what you need. It's continuing what happened in Genesis chapter 2. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. One of the crucial lessons that the original hearers of this law needed to learn was that their life was more than what they could do. If you remember, this is following the Exodus out of Egypt. And for several hundred years, the Israelites had been enslaved to Pharaoh, and every day they would make bricks. They would make more and more bricks. There was time for community, but for the most part, they were told what their day was going to look like. And 7 days a week, they just had to produce what needed to be produced. And their only value that would be drilled into them over and over and over again is simply this: how many bricks can you make? I don't think anyone in this room is an indentured servant, not that I know of. If you are, just kind of nod your head in a weird way, and we'll talk to you after and see if we can't help you out with that. But throughout history, this is one of the ways that you get a people to do your bidding, as you give them one message over and over again: your only value is in what you provide for me. Now, you may not be an indentured servant, but you may be someone who has become to believe that your value is what you do, or how much you make, or how you look, or what kind of car you drive, or what your bank account looks like, or what you have to do to get your bank account to a place where you get to feel like the kind of person you want to feel like. You may be the kind of person who walks in and you may just look like death warmed over, and no one asks. All they want to know is, when can you get this next project done? And you just feel like you're an invisible person who's just working, working, working. And unfortunately, for many of us, this is the life in which we live. You may be thinking, well, I don't work 7 days a week. But yet, at the end of your work week, you then enter into another group of projects that have to be done at your house, or at a friend's house, or at a family member's house, or things that just need to be taken care of around, you know, around you that you couldn't do because you were at work. For some of you that have really physical jobs, you get home and you can't even think about doing anything else because you're just beat. I just got to stop and I got to take a nap and I got to rest, and now it's, you know, the day's over and I got to start over again. One of the most defeating things you can do to yourself is not create a break in your work week, and you just continue to go to the next day and the next day and the next day, the next work week. You roll out of the weekend, you've been busy all weekend, and Monday morning you got to go back to work and you just feel like, oh, I'm so tired. Do you ever just have those Monday morning blues in which you're like, I haven't rested at all. Maybe next weekend I'll have a chance to recover. I'm just exhausted and now I've got to start my week again. We've all done it. There have all, for all of us, been times we've had to do it. But it takes a toll on us. It takes a toll on us physically. It takes a toll on us emotionally. It takes a toll on us spiritually. It is really hard to think about a good God and a good life and that I am good and we are good if all I can think about is the next thing I have to do. You have to have margin for that. One of the things Deidre and I have been working on for the last few years is creating that margin and finding that time in which we can do enjoyable things together and time that we can just get away and we can rest and not just sit in our chairs and not just watch TV, but do things that are restorative, that allow us to get outside the mundane things that we do every single day. We go out and do something different. Sometimes we get ourselves into hard places. We went riding our bikes one day over at Hickson Dog Park and Farm, Greenway. We went over to Greenway. Well, there's a path over there that you can take that goes past an old quarry. Has anyone taken that? You've not taken it on a bike, I'll tell you that right now, because it's straight up and downhill. And we started going, and you know, you hit that first hill going downhill, you never start going uphill. Like, there's never a warning that says you're about to enter a place where you don't want to go. You start down here, and you're like, this is great. This is so easy. This is a really long down. I'm picking up speed. How long is this? I'm going to have to come back up this hill. Sometimes we get ourselves into hard spots when we want to get away and do something, and then we just in shame walk our bikes back up the hill when we finally, you know, decide to turn around and come back. But we get away and we reset. Conversation that I had with Deidre on the way down to Sanford, and I was like, I'm just stressed out. I don't know why. There's not a single thing that I can point to that has my heart rate shooting up. But I just feel stressed. But after a couple of days of just celebrating with Emma and being there on the campus and in another place and different things that we never do, I was so rested. When you have those moments, do you ever have a moment where you're like, I don't think I'm going to go back? Do you ever have those moments? You go to vacation or you just have a particularly restful time or just a wonderful time away and you're like, I think I'm just going to stay here and see if I can make this continue. Sabbath is so incredibly important to recognize you are not just what you can do and what you can produce. For those Israelites, all they knew was that they had to work, and they were ready to work, and they were hard workers. God said, but I didn't create you to be hard workers. I created you to have a relationship with me, to have a good community to be a part of, that you enjoy, and that you see that life is a blessing. It is a gift. And work is not a curse. Unless work takes a disproportionate role in our life than it was meant to. Now, I read, like you do, the reports in different parts of the country where they're moving to a 2 or 3 day work week. Wouldn't that be nice? I don't think it's ever going to happen. I don't even know how I would do that. The point is not that we should work. It's not that work should be bad. In fact, both in Genesis and in Exodus, it says, you shall work 6 days and rest one. You don't have to work 6 days. But the point is not that you aren't supposed to work. The point is that you need a break. You need a rest. And it's not just any rest. It is a kind of rest that allows you to connect with God, to delight in God, to worship, but also to just enjoy life with the people around you, your family, your friends, the people you go to church with, to enjoy it, to have fun. And to recognize that what God has given us in bodies that work and the ability to communicate with people, I want you to enjoy this life that's been given you, I think is what God would say. But work is a necessary part of life. We live in a culture where we need more, 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 and it takes away from what is good. for some in the room, you're thinking, well, I like the idea of Sabbath, but I can't necessarily follow all the rules. I can't have a 24-hour period of time where I do no work. You don't understand my life. Or, you know, if you have young children, you realize that, you know, you work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. How am I going to do that? I guess we'll just throw them in the room and shut the door and turn the TV up real loud. I don't know. How are we going to take a rest? One of the things that can kill the Sabbath is legalism. The idea that God is only happy with you if you do it exactly the right way, exactly the right time, every single time. I shared with you, it's been probably 3 weeks ago or so when we talked a little bit about some of the predominant thinkers in the Jewish world. And those teachers in which when Jesus would say something like, you've heard it said, but I tell you, where he's refuting some of the teachers of the law that are twisting it in a way that Jesus did not like. He would at times just say, I'm gonna tell you what you think is right because this predominant teacher says it, but that's not true. This is right. And I mentioned two in particular, two teachers. One was, do you remember, these are extra points here. Does anybody remember who they are? Shammai and Hillel. Yeah, good. Very good. Oh. All right, Shammai and Hillel. There we go. One of the interesting things about Shammai and Hillel is that when Jesus was asked what's the greatest commandment, this was a tool by which you would identify the validity of the teaching of the rabbi that you were listening to. And so you could ask them, what's the greatest law? What's the greatest commandment? And it would be universally, or you would be ignored, would be love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. Now Jesus would go on to say the second is like it. He wasn't asked for the second, but he gave the second, to which we just think, well, that's just really important too, which it is. And Jesus said the second greatest commandment is to do what? Love your neighbor as yourself. So Hillel was one of those predominant thinkers, predominant rabbis, charismatic guys who gave interpretation to the law. And what we find is that Jesus usually is attracted to the teachings of Hillel. They typically have similar teachings. And if you were to ask Hillel, what is the second greatest commandment? He would say it is to love your neighbor as yourself. But if you were asked Shammai, he would say the second greatest commandment is to keep the Sabbath holy. Which seems like, what's the big deal? And I think this is one of the challenges we still struggle with in religious circles today. We struggle with it through Christianity today. And that is the difference between loving your neighbor and keeping the rules. And so what Hillel would say is that the law is meant for you to flourish, to grow, to enjoy life, to experience life as it was meant to be experienced. Shammai might not say it this way, but the way it is often interpreted is this. The law is here to make sure that you don't mess up and that God's not unhappy with you. Those are two completely different messages. And Jesus, when he says the second greatest commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself, is saying this is the perspective of the law that you should have. The law is meant to help us to love our neighbor as ourself. Now, interestingly, we talked a little bit about Jewish tradition, the tradition of the elders last week, or maybe I think that was last week. It might have been 2 weeks ago. They're running together now. And the tradition of the elders were all of these laws outside of the Ten Commandments, outside of the 613 laws of the Torah, that they added just to make sure that we go above and beyond what God is asking. But by adding those laws, you have to have some perspective on what the law was about. And so a huge number of these extra laws that were added later, this tradition of the elders, are on the Sabbath. Because so many of the teachers believe you need to follow the rules, and the most important one is to keep the Sabbath holy. I shared one, I think, last week with you, or just kind of crazy For example, one of these extra laws that have come up over the years is that if you're walking and a fly lands on you, you're not supposed to do any work on the Sabbath, which means you can't carry a person because that's work. And literally, just to be safe, if a fly lands on your shoulder, you cannot walk. You have to wait until the fly flies off of your shoulder, because if you walked with a fly on your shoulder, you would be carrying the fly, and that would be work, and you would be breaking the Sabbath. These are some of the crazy laws that, just to prove that you're observant, began to formulate. And what Jesus is trying to show us is you need the Sabbath. We've looked at a couple of places already in Mark where he has done some things that have angered the Pharisees, who seem to be following the teachings of Shammai instead of Hillel, in which they're just calling him on it. One was when he and the disciples were walking through a field and they were hungry, and they're picking some grain, which was their legal right to do. They could glean from the edges of the field if they were traveling through so they could eat. And they said, that's work. You shouldn't be working on the Sabbath. Jesus said a couple of things about just following him in general, but also about the Sabbath. In Matthew chapter 11, verse 28, he says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Right? I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. In responding to these Pharisees who said you shouldn't be working or healing, when he healed on the Sabbath, he really made a lot of them mad. I think more probably because he's healing and they weren't. But he did it on the Sabbath, and so they called him on it. You can't do that on the Sabbath. In Mark 2, verse 27, he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. In other words, we need these moments of rest. Excuse me. We need these moments of rest, of rejuvenation, of just remembering of all the things that seem bad in the world. There are some good things, and we need to be thankful for those. We need to be with the people we care about and recognize we're blessed because they're in our lives and that we're in theirs. Some signs you need to start practicing a Sabbath. One, you are regularly stressed or overwhelmed. Is that anybody here? Regularly stressed or overwhelmed? Probably most people in the room, not everybody. Another one, if someone asks you how you're doing, we respond with, what? I'm busy. I'm good, but busy. Or I'm busy. If you are constantly responding to, how are you doing? Life's busy. You probably need a Sabbath. You get irritated with others quickly and often. I remember the first time that I recognized I was in a real Sabbath deficit was a few years ago. And I went into Zaxby's and I ordered, I don't remember what, something. And life was busy. My work was going really well. I had more new clients than I had ever. I was working day and night, 7 days a week. We were trying to get Journey off the ground. I was trying to keep all my clients happy because they were paying the majority of our bills. And I went in, I was going to get some work done, and I ordered a salad, and it was wrong. My stress level was through the roof. I had stuff that had to be done. My anxiety level was through the roof. My heart was constantly racing. Busy, busy, busy. They got my order wrong. I mean, In the realm of things that go wrong in your life, getting the wrong salad at Zaxby's is not really that bad of a problem. It's not like a high problem, right? And so I walked up there, my order's wrong. And then I don't know what happened. They were laughing and talking. They weren't moving to correct the problem. And I interpreted they were laughing at me. They were laughing at me. They don't care about me. I'm just some random guy that wants a different salad. And I remember just saying, you know what? Forget it. Give me my money back. I'm leaving. And I walked out of that restaurant going, what just happened? I'm fairly, I try to avoid conflict for the most part in life. I'm not someone who loves conflict. That is what just happened. And I remember I went out to my car, and as it sank in, being incredibly embarrassed, but ultimately asking myself, what is wrong with me? Do you ever have those moments? Probably not. You all probably handle it better than me. You know, you don't want to admit you're a pastor. I probably didn't frequent that Zaxby's for probably 6 months. Like, I was hoping they would forget what I look like. You get irritated with others quickly and often. If that's you, you probably need a Sabbath. If that's with your significant other, with the person that you love, the person that you care about, the person you've chosen to do life with, it's possible that you need a Sabbath if you're constantly getting irritated with others, especially if you can't even point to why. A fourth sign that you may need to start practicing a Sabbath is that you're more comfortable at work than at rest. You sit down and you stop, and all you can think about is getting back to work. You feel good at work, productive at work. I get stuff done at work. I have value at work. I don't know who I am at rest. Another sign you may need to start practicing a Sabbath is you feel stuck in your faith, because a Sabbath is not that we just sit and have fun. A Sabbath is a time to focus on the gifts that God has given us, to delight in Him, and to recognize that there's an intimate relationship with Him that is good. And we don't want to forget. It also creates an incredible amount of margin. We'll talk about another spiritual practice, the practice of solitude, which is just quiet. Like allowing everything to leave your mind, which most of us can't do, by the way. We might can do it for a minute or two, but like for hours, could we just empty it out? We remember that when God reveals Himself, He always revealed Himself in subtle, nuanced, quiet ways, like a whisper. And if we're not quiet and have margin to hear Him, we're not going to. Sabbath helps keep us from getting stuck in our faith. It helps us stop thinking that God is out to get us, because we see all the good things in our lives when we take the Sabbath. Another sign you need to start practicing a Sabbath, I don't know if you've ever done this, you fantasize about needing some type of operation that's going to require a 7-day stay in the hospital. You just don't want it to be too invasive, and you don't want pain to be involved. But you think, you know, if I got hurt just bad enough that I had to go to the hospital for a week, that would not be so bad right now. If you ever think that, you're in desperate need of a Sabbath. So how do we practice this practically? What does this look like? Marv Vidon, who wrote a book called Keeping the Sabbath Holy, Wholly, said this: everything is turned around when we keep the Sabbath. If we don't observe it, Sunday just leads us back into the humdrum of the regular work week, which leaves a great number of people awfully depressed on Sunday evenings. Keeping the Sabbath ushers us into the recognition that all days derive their meaning from the Sabbath. As Abram Heschel points out, the spirit of the Bible is different from that of Aristotle, who asserted that relaxation is not an end. It is for the sake of activity, for the sake of gaining strength for new efforts, Heschel continues. To the biblical mind, however, labor is the means towards an end, and the Sabbath as a day of rest, as a day of abstaining from toil, is not for the purpose of recovering one's lost strength and becoming fit for the forthcoming labor. The Sabbath is a day for the sake of life. Man is not a beast of burden. And the Sabbath is not for the purpose of enhancing the efficiency of this work. Last in creation, first in intention, the Sabbath is the end of the creation of heaven and earth. The Sabbath is not for the sake of the weekdays. The weekdays are for the sake of Sabbath. It is not an interlude, but the climax of living. In our American culture, in every person, in which every person is judged by his or her work and rest is determined by our labors, we desperately need this radical reorientation made possible by the Jewish concept of time in which rest determines work. Such a concept reorients our entire way of thinking about people. That reorientation of time that he's talking about there, she's talking about there, is the idea that your day doesn't start at sun up. Your day starts at sundown. You prepare for the next day by the rest you have the day before. And we recognize that our weekdays are not primarily what life is, but the Sabbath is primarily what life is, and the work that we do allows us to Sabbath. We don't Sabbath so we can work harder or longer or more. The Sabbath is one of the pivotal ideas of all of Scripture, and it's one that we historically don't practice well, which is why so many of us struggle with anxiety and depression. Not the only reason, but one of those reasons. It's a reorientation of the way we see life and work and time. The Sabbath schedule, typically for someone who was practicing it according to this ancient Near Eastern way, on Friday before sundown, you're going to take your shower, you're going to get the house ready, you're going to do the initial prep for your food, so that once sundown hits Friday, sundown, you're not having to go do all those things to work. You're going to light some candles, you're going to say a blessing, often gather with close ones, either your family or close friends, and you're going to have a meal. Some would even dress up in some type of a kind of a festive clothing just so that even the environment of being together feels different, good, uplifting, light, joyful. You would eat together. You would rest. You would spend time telling stories, reflecting on the law or how good it is, or just sharing life with each other. That was Friday night. Saturday morning, there would be sacrifices in the temple. You would go to synagogue, kind of like we come to worship. There would be a time of worship. There would be a time of teaching, a time of reading the Scriptures. This that we do on Sunday morning is not the pinnacle of what we do as Christians. It's just a portion of the Sabbath in which we rest and we experience and we grow. You're going to also have another meal with everyone that is going to be festive, that you have done the work ahead of time. You're going to spend the rest of the day resting and relaxing and doing the things you enjoy. Perhaps in our modern world, you have favorite board games, or you like to go for a walk or a bike ride or a hike or something like that. The laws that will continue to be built upon the Torah say that you're not supposed to walk more than a half a mile. I don't think that was the point. The point was that you're not trying to get ahead to travel, to use the Sabbath as an opportunity to get ahead. Instead, you fully immerse yourself in this moment of rest. But the day is filled with rest, and more than that, it's filled with gratitude. What is good in my life? What can we be thankful for? This is one of the blessings of being married to Deidre. She's way better at that than I am. I tend to think of all the things that need to be done, all the things that are bad. She reminds me what is good. She's helped me over the years to do better in that. You'll eat again in the afternoon. You may sing psalms, rest. You may study the Torah a bit. But you're not going to travel. You're not going to go buying stuff. You're not going to go get your groceries for the week. This is a time to just rest and to enjoy life. Shabbat would end sundown on Saturday. Now I want to encourage you that if you can't do a Friday night to Saturday night, like most of us, Sunday is a part of our Sabbath. Jesus teaches us that we're not to be legalistic about this. If you take your Sabbath Saturday night to Sunday morning, or maybe I don't have a 24-hour period because of what's happening this week, and you choose moments through your week to Sabbath, it's not the same as a 24-hour period, but start somewhere. God is pleased that you're starting somewhere, and let it have its restorative work be complete in you. Sabbath is intentional restoration built on rest, gratitude, joy, simplicity, and repetition. For our Bema folks in the room, Marty Solomon talks about his Sabbath in this way. He says, we rest, we play, no work. God loves us. Here's what I want to give you some homework for you to practice this. I'm going to take communion together and we're going to be done for today. Homework number one. Find the time to take Sabbath somehow, some way, even if it's not perfect, even if it's not the perfect time, even if it's not the perfect activities, even if it's not with all the people you wish it was with. Pick a place. Friday night to Saturday morning. Saturday night to Sunday morning. Sometime during the week when you have time. If you work Tuesday through Sunday, maybe it's Sunday night through Monday night. I don't know. Maybe it's Tuesday afternoon. Find a time, pick a time, and try it. One of the encouragements that John Mark Comer gives us in trying to practice the Sabbath is to pick a beginning and an ending ritual, something that marks the beginning of this time and something marks the ending of this time. It can be a lighting candles, a prayer, or a blessing. It could be a story. It could be reading a scripture. Find something that marks the beginning of the Sabbath. Keep that Sabbath until the end, no matter how long a period you've set aside, and mark that at the beginning and the end. And then I would also encourage you to include others as is feasible. Invite people over. Enjoy that time with them. As we go through these practices or these rhythms, some other encouragements from practicing the way that I think is helpful in all of these spiritual practices. Number one, smart, start small. Start small. Start where you are. Start what you can. Number two, think subtraction, not addition. What do I need to take out of my time? Not what do I need to add to it. Number three, you get out what you put in. So if you don't do the work, if you don't give it a try, doing the work's the wrong phrase. If you don't try it, if you don't spend time preparing for it, if you don't set aside for it, you might not get much out of it. You probably won't. Fourth, he calls the J curve. Remember the J curve. As you start removing things, you may actually feel like life's getting harder. And whenever you would have done other things during the time that you're setting aside for your Sabbath, you may miss some of those things. You may feel like you're kind of going backwards before you start feel like you're going forwards. Keep with it. And number five, and this is true about so many things, there is no formation without repetition. There is no formation without repetition. You've got to practice this over and over again. But again, this is a rhythm. If you miss a week, just pick it back up the next week. Don't feel judged. Feel like you failed. In closing, Sabbath heals us. It reminds us that life is good. God is good. And we are good. And I want to encourage you to find that time to practice these things. And you might find some healing in yourself as well.